This is The Rich Eisen Show. Guess who's back?
You believe it, not hope, yes!
It's a big day for us here at The Rich Eisen Show.
Excited.
Yes.
Live from The Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
I'll tell you what, man.
The Rich Eisen Show. Earlier on the show, ESPN NFL insider Adam Schefter. Coming up, legendary broadcaster Al Michaels with 1980 Team USA goalie Jim Craig. Plus, your phone calls, poll results, and more. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
All right, way to jar it. Hour number three. They did not.
Yeah,
two out of three ain't bad, though, as Meatloaf once said.
Hey.
844-204-RICH, number to dial. We'll take your calls in a matter of moments. I can't wait to show to you what I did on Thursday, which was to Zoom with Al Michaels and Jim Craig in advance of today's show, which is the 41st anniversary of the Miracle on Ice in Lake Placid, New York.
We believe in miracles.
Yes. Today. That's coming up in just a few minutes' time. It's a dynamite conversation. I will say this. Al Michaels, after it was over, texted me, and I called him back. I mean, by the way, he's an occasional FaceTimer. It's phenomenal. And he is a sneaky FaceTimer, Al Michaels.
Like, you don't know? It's just unexpected?
It's great. And do you believe him? Does he believe in FaceTime? Yes. So told me that Jim Craig told stories he'd never heard, including one about Herb Brooks. Can't wait to show it to you. That's coming up. Please stay tuned. Stay put. It's very special. Adam Schefter in hour number one. Great conversation with him. YouTube.com/RichEisenShow to catch everything. Or when it's all over here on Peacock, go right here. I'm pointing to the spot on the bar on your screen where our show lives, where you can watch it on demand and also see some of our favorite videos, including what we did in hour number two, where I put some of my favorite movie lines on Twitter based on this meme that went around. And you guys enjoyed that. And tomorrow, I guess we just start to cultivate this caper to use that would be a good one, right?
Cultivate.
You can cultivating the caper. You use that line. It's Maury the Wigman from that's basically the preview of what Del Tufo is going to give tomorrow. Because he's going to give me his five movie lines from Goodfellas.
Goodfellas, Casino, like all mob movies. Mike.
Well, it might be.
Could you imagine if they're all love movies, right?
By the way, on a side note,
my favorite line from Love Story.
On a side note, everybody needs to watch the De Palma, Brian De Palma doc that's on.
Okay.
TV right now.
Very good.
Okay. Amazing.
Susie and I watched the Bee Gees documentary over there.
I heard that's amazing.
It's great.
It's amazing.
Two words.
That's amazing.
I'll give you two words that you don't expect out of it. Spoiler alert. It does. I don't think I'm spoiling too much. Two words that you don't expect out of the Bee Gees documentary. Charlie Steiner. That's it.
Wait, what?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Like the Charlie Steiner?
Charlie and Steiner. Yes.
Like this Francis Scott off-key Charlie Steiner?
That guy. Yes. Charlie is, you want to talk about sneaky, Charlie's everywhere in pop culture.
Whoa.
Yes. Charlie Steiner, Bee Gees documentary. One of those moments where Susie and I look at each other, what? Hold on. What?
Exactly. He comes in.
And it's great. When it's over, I defy you to not want to put Bee Gees music on and have it's a dance-a-thon in your kitchen, which is what we did.
The thing about it is you forget that the Bee Gees really existed before Saturday Night Fever.
Oh my gosh. And then afterwards, the music that they wrote.
Yo, yeah. The Bee Gees career, like they were a boy band. And then they went off a little, and then the Saturday Night Fever boom came.
Right.
And then, like you said, they went on the right.
And then just to bring this full circle, because I do want to talk a little bit of headlines from today before we get to Jim Craig and Al Michaels. There is a moment in the Bee Gees documentary where things turn in the Bee Gees career, and the scene in which it does turn about how disco becomes hated was the disco demolition night moment in Comiskey Park.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And by the way,
you remember they had that disco demolition night in between a doubleheader. There was a riot on the field.
DJ hated disco.
It's a big moment. It's a big moment in this documentary.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, a lot of the stuff that went on this summer, like, it really kind of ties in with what the Bee Gees had to deal with and the reason people didn't like disco.
No question.
It's kind of makes you go, wow.
That blew us away, too.
Yeah.
So, at any rate, 844-204-RICH, number to dial here on the show. Chris Brockman, let's get a quick news update from you here on this busy Monday before Al Michaels and Jim Craig stroll down Miracle on Ice, Memory Lane.
And now, with a report of the day's news from the world of sports and entertainment, someone who is not a journalist or newsman by any definition of the word whatsoever, it's Chris Brockman.
Hi, Christopher. What do you have over there?
Hey.
A couple quick hitters.
How's it going, everybody?
That is not the way you're supposed to start a newscast.
Why not?
Makes you sound unprepared.
But Tom Brokaw, I had to scroll down. Tom Brokaw says good evening. You know what I mean? When he's Lester Holt, hey, yeah, good evening. Here's the news.
You don't start a newscast like your Norm walking into Cheers. Okay? Afternoon, everybody. Like, that's not the way you start a newscast.
That kind of makes him a man of the people.
So hard of it is, it's like, Chris, like we should all scream, Chris, hey. Afternoon, everybody.
All right. One of the quarterbacks, we talked to Adam Schefter about all the QBs that could be on the move. Sam Darnold, one of them. Ian Rappaport had this morning. The Jets are planning to complete their evaluations of the top quarterbacks in the draft.
Yes.
Before making any decisions
yes.
on Sam Darnold.
Yes.
This includes pro days and interviews. While they've received real interest in Darnold, they want to get the full QB picture
yes.
first.
Can I interpret that headline?
Of course.
Today's headline interpreted. So your headline is, what is it again? The Jets are going to kick the tires on all the...
Jets are going to fully evaluate yes. all QBs before making decision on Darnold.
And here's the I guess, thing that I take out of it. The Jets are basically saying, we got stuff to do while we're waiting for Deshaun Watson. We can fill the time. Between now and the draft, oh, we've got lots of work to do. We can wait this thing out. Houston... You're not taking our calls in the same way Deshaun's not taking yours? Okay. We've got stuff to do. We got tape to watch. We have things that we can do between now and then. Of course, what else are they going to do?
I don't know.
What are they going to? Yeah, you know what we're going to do? We're going to make a big move for Zach Wilson right now and take ourselves out of Deshaun Watson running. Nah. Or we're just going to, you know, we're gonna do our due diligence and we're going to take a look at all these people before we take a look at Sam Darnold and then we'll make our move. And this entire time, when they make their move for Deshaun Watson, if they don't get him, I'm like, well, we were doing this the whole time. Good moves. All of them. Because what else are you going to do?
Yeah, we got time.
Play Battleship?
Yeah,
to do that too? Yeah.
We got time. All right, did you guys see this morning? So we know Carson Wentz. Traded from Philadelphia to Indianapolis. We know Carson Wentz wore number 11 in
yes.
college at North Dakota State.
Yes.
Wore number 11 for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yes.
Well, someone wears number 11 for the Colts right now. It's Michael Pittman, rookie receiver from last year. Had a nice year from USC. Michael Pittman told TMZ, I am number 11.
Yes.
I don't think there's any deal that's going to be done.
Okay. Now, that is the soundbite that is somewhat salacious
yes.
right now.
Sounds like it.
I watched this today. This is what I saw this. I actually hit TMZ Sports and hit that carrot that means play. I actually watched the entirety of
yeah.
it. And so he was very respectful.
Right.
And it was kind of a cool thing. He said, we're cool. Carson and I are cool. He said said he spoke to Carson Wentz, okay, and that Carson kind of like, you know, asked him about it. And then when, you know, Michael said, I'm kind of keen on number 11.
Yeah,
I'm paraphrasing. I'm keen on number 11. He said that Carson then backed off and said, it's okay. I was thinking of changing anyway.
Oh, well,
okay.
There you
which is, you know, an interesting way of putting it. And you know, so why ask if you're not interested? Oh, okay, so that means he's kind of interested, but I'll back off. I don't want to make this a big right. thing, even though you are definitely not going to cough up number 11. I'm sitting there thinking to myself, like, if I'm number 11 and I'm the guy, like, why would I give up my number for this guy, right? Or for any person,
sure.
right? Unless you're, say, Chris Godwin and you're wearing 12 and Tom Brady shows up.
Oh.
What'd he do? What'd he do?
Gave it up.
Oh, yes, he did.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, he did. So I will just spit truth. I spit truth here.
Hot fire.
You know, Blake Shelton jingles just don't come out of thin air.
Wow.
You got to earn them.
Wow.
True.
You got to earn them.
Wow.
For be a wizen.
When it comes to football, he sure is a wizen.
Sing it, Blake. Preach. Preach.
Rich Eisen.
Blake Shelton, everybody. Blake Shelton. Clap for Blake. Okay.
What up, Blake?
They don't just come out of thin air. I will spit truth. Not a shot. If Aaron Rodgers showed up, that Michael Pittman wouldn't cough up the number for Aaron Rodgers. Not a shot. Of course. He just doesn't. What is this guy? This guy craps out of Philadelphia. He wants my number. Oh, there's no other way to I'm sorry.
But here's the other thing.
I'm sorry. There's no, no, TJ, I don't think there is another thing, even though you might have a thing to say. But honestly, Philip Rivers, if Philip Rivers showed up last year and wore number 11, come on now. Godwin didn't have a choice because he's Brady. Wentz shows up, got a choice.
Mark, hey, I want you to have my cheese fries.
Exactly. Philly was coughing up cheese fries for Sanchez.
What if Wentz shows up?
Did you just equate a number with cheese fries?
What if Wentz shows up with a backpack full of bricks? I don't know. I mean,
honey buns, baby. What if you got the honey buns in the bag?
I went back and forth on this morning, and I'm like, I know I'm going to have an opinion on this. So what is my opinion? My opinion is like, yes, if you're Pittman, you're going to say this is my number. This is how I show up and shine out. Your new quarterback's shown up. He asks you just to kick in the tires. Just kick in the tires on the number. No, I don't want to give it up. Oh, it's all right. I was gonna take another number anyway.
I would look at it like this.
So honestly though, what if somebody it is about Wentz's resume? Otherwise he'd cough the number up.
Or is it, could you think like, okay, you're a second year Pittman, second, two, 3 years?
It'll be a second year coming up.
All right. Here's your guy who's now charge of, like, essentially
getting you the ball.
Feeding you. I would be like, you want my number?
Here it is.
Cool. Yeah. Because what if T.Y. Hilton goes, hey, you want 17? And Kurtz is like, yeah, guess who's getting all the balls now?
Right.
T.Y. Hilton.
Well, again, it's just like, who do you want to butter up?
Right?
You know, who's going to make sure that you've got the bread yourself?
By the way, I'm not giving my number up unless
that man his money.
No, I know. I hear you.
I gotta be taken care of.
I hear you. Of course. I wouldn't just cough it up either.
Now, if Brady comes, different story. I give him.
You know,
the
I don't think there's ever been any story about how much Brady did or what Brady did for Godwin.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sure. And knowing Brady, he definitely
probably took care of him.
I can't remember where I read this, but somebody made a comment that like it was meant to be like Godwin just was like, here, take it, Tom. But somebody said that, it was a little bit deeper than him just handing
but
the
bottom
number.
Line is,
wasn't a C-note.
He got it.
You know. This is absolutely, by the way, stuff that is 1,000% what you talk about on February 22nd in the NFL.
Yeah.
But cut to week three, you know. Pittman's like, I'm wide open.
Week three and two, Hilton's got 40 catches on the season.
Like, yeah. Like, throw me the ball. Right, on Michael Pittman bobblehead night.
Like, I'm wide open.
That's a record number of catches for T.Y. Hilton. Think about it.
Tom Brady also got Chris Godwin a Super Bowl ring.
Put a pin in that. Put a pin in that is all I'm saying. Let's take a break. If you're on hold, stay on hold. We're going to take your phone calls after this conversation and sit back just like everybody else and enjoy it. Because it's awesome. Al Michaels and Jim Craig on the 41st anniversary of the Miracle on Ice together. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people. Or as you might know from their jingle, O-O-O O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. Because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, fly on the wall.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Rich Eisen Show, 844-204. Rich, if you're on hold, stay on hold and sit back and enjoy this conversation. Today is the 41st anniversary of the famed Miracle on Ice, when Team USA, filled with a bunch of hungry amateurs, beat the Russians. It was, in fact, a miracle. As our friend Al Michaels said, beating the Soviets back in the day. 41 years ago today in Lake Placid, New York. And to celebrate that, Al Michaels with the goalie, Jim Craig, together.
This is an honor for here on the Rich Eisen Show on the 41st anniversary of the Miracle on Ice, the goalie who stopped 36 of 39 shots to beat the Soviets, and the man who called the action for the Olympics, Jim Craig and Al Michaels, here together on the Rich Eisen Show. Happy anniversary, guys.
41 awesome. Years, just amazing. Incredible. Now,
must make you like 47 years old.
I was actually seven, and you were two.
I was two.
I think back to when we did the wrap-up show that night, the Sunday night after the Finland game, and Jim McKay brings me in and Ken Dryden, and he said, "Do you think this will live on for a while?" And I didn't want to say for sure, because otherwise, you know, in case it didn't, that would look like a dope. But if he would have said 41 years later, people are still talking about this and exulting, that was a miracle.
Yeah, kind of crazy, right?
So, if you don't mind, let's start our chat here about the day. Jim, what are your recollections about waking up that day and starting your day, knowing what the day could actually hold for you, Jim?
Well, you know, in your life, you always look at opportunities that you're going to get, and you want to make the most of them. I just remembered in preparation, my preparation was so different for that game because we had played them in Madison Square Garden. I didn't play the whole game. I played some. It was a incredible, as I look at it, strategic thing that Herb did. But for me, to have played them before became so important to be able to prepare for them for the second time, right? So, you know, I looked at it in all honesty that if you played one period against the Russians, it was equivalent to a whole game against any other team. And so I broke the game into three separate games of 4 or 5 minute periods. And so I could concentrate and be really laser focused, and then broke the game into, like, you can't let them score in the third period because that was the most important momentum wise. And so when I did that, the game moved along faster and it was easier to prepare. And, you know, a goalie's position is so different because you can't go out and be excited. You have to react to the game and really try to control the momentum in a very favorable way. Like, if your team scores a goal, you try not to give up a goal very quickly. And momentum is such an important thing. And we had that home crowd and it had been building. And so for me, it was really the excitement of having this opportunity that so many people had helped me along the way that I was ready for it. You know, it was really fun for me. I kind of liked those type moments.
What about you, Al?
When I woke up that morning, I thought, well, you know, this is a very exciting time. And it's a very exciting situation where the U.S. was able to get to the medal round, have the opportunity to face the best team in the world. But frankly, I was very fearful of the fact that the Soviets could blow the U.S. team out, and it could be 4-0 or 5-0 at the end of the first period. And I know when Ken Dryden and I walked over to the arena, our hotel was only 4 or 5 blocks away. I think I said something along the lines of, if it's only 3-1 Soviets midway through the second period, that's not bad. So they scored first midway through the first period. And I'm thinking, oh, man, you know, hold on. Don't let it be 2-3, 4-0. And then we get the tying goal. And then they go ahead again, 2-1. And then Mark Johnson scores that goal with no time left at the end of the first period. So we now have more than we asked for. The amazing thing to me about that game as it developed, and it was so interesting listening. I haven't heard Jim talk in those terms, even, you know, 41 years later, listening to how he broke that game down in his mind. Most important thing in that game was that Jim never allowed it to be a two-goal game. Never. It was 1-0 Soviets, it was 1-1. It was 2-1 Soviets, it was 2-2. It was 3-2 Soviets, and they dominated the second period. Outshot the U.S. team something like 16-3. And Jim made a number of saves, you know, standing on his head. And that kept the U.S. in the game and enabled the tying goal to be scored midway through the third, and then, of course, the Ruzioni goal. And then it just got crazy. I mean, the last 10 minutes were insane. The Soviets are skating these crazy shifts on and off the ice every 20 seconds. The crowd is going wild. And it was a one-off. And again, you know, you look at what Jim did in that game. How many times do you win a game when the team is outshot 39-16? So that was nobody anticipated what took place.
How often do you watch it, Jim? How often do you actually sit there and watch it back?
Ever? You know, I think I've truly, in 41 years now, watched the full game maybe once.
Wow.
And, you know, the point is, you know, we all wanted to become in the National Hockey League. American players had never been really accepted in the National Hockey League. And so you couldn't go in there and be proud of what you had accomplished, because to them, you had accomplished nothing, right? And so you really could never, ever relax and feel good about what you accomplished, because you always had another goal. And so as I've got older, I really said, you know, my son is 32 years old. I said, you know, JD, we should just sit and watch this game. I should tell you about some of these things. And, you know, it's we're getting just to that age, Rich, where we don't care. You know what I mean? It's like, that was cool. I can say that, because now I'm like that. I'm a grandpa. You know what I mean? I can say those things. Nobody's going to critique me for being happy. But it was never like that. So, you know, you never watch that because you always have a different goal in mind.
Al, what about you?
You know, a story I have to tell you, this is the 41st anniversary, is last year, you know, pre-pandemic, it's the actual 40th anniversary. And the Vegas Golden Knights invited the whole team to come back and be honored before the game at T-Mobile Arena. And the crowd is chanting, USA, USA. This is 40 years after the fact. And at least 2/3 of the people in that building weren't even born when this took place. But they knew the story. They had played a little video beforehand. And to me, one of the most astonishing things, after they announced that the team one by one, the guys came out, walking off the ice, you know, to get back underneath the stands, they had to pass by the Golden Knights bench. And none of these guys were born at that point. And a lot of those guys weren't even from the United States. But they were all, like, leaning over the boards and hugging the American kids. It was like the American team down in their 60s. I'm going, it's almost as if everybody in the NHL understood what this meant to hockey in this country.
I've got Jim Craig and Al Michaels here together on the 41st anniversary of the Miracle on Ice here on the Rich Eisen Show. Jim, what did Herb Brooks say to you? Obviously, we've seen the movie Miracle and that remarkable speech that Kurt Russell, playing Herb, gave to the team about moments. That's a, you know, top-notch moment in sports movie history. But what did Herb say to you guys before taking the ice in the medal round against the Russians?
You know, it's really interesting in the work I do now, which is motivational speaking. I always tell people something I learned from Herb that was really, really important. And that was time management, right? And, you know, everybody thinks priorities, everything else. But the most important thing in time management is knowing how much time you have, because that drives all strategies, right? You don't know how to create a strategy unless you know how much time you have, right? And so Herb Brooks trained us and treated us the way he did because he only had 6 months, right? But when it came that night, he was our confidence. He absolutely believed in us. He absolutely loved us. Each of us individually, he knew how to take us to this different level. He had recruited us specifically. And, you know, when I wrote my book, We Win, one of the things in the studying of Herb that really became so apparent to me was when he said, you're not looking for the best players, you're looking for the right players. What he meant is players that as a leader, you can coach, and players as leaders that you can get them to go to some place that they don't even know is possible without your help. Right. And that's what great mentors do. So what Herb Brooks was able to do was to take each and every one of us and get us to that spot that we were prepared and he was proud and he was our confidence. So for me, it was different than it was for Mark Johnson, than it was for Mark Wells, than it was for Jack O'Callaghan, but it was the same because he had brought us to believe in a level. Like a lot of leaders want to tell people how to think instead of making people think. And Herb Brooks just had this ability to reach into your soul and see something that he was not going to let you get away with not getting to. He took on that responsibility. And so to me, the greatest thing about Herb was that he realized what our potential was and he treated us all differently to get there. And then when we got there, he became our confidence and protector. And if you want to have a real thing, watch the game against Czech when Mark Johnson gets run by the Czech and he tells him he'll take that coho and stuff it right down. You know, and I can't even say the words, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, he was a special man, a really special man.
Now, what are your recollections of him? I mean, was he tough to deal with from your perspective, or what was it from your end with Herb Brooks, Al?
I think it was very tough for the press, but for me, it was very simple. And for that, I can thank Ken Dryden, because Ken, of course, had won the Stanley Cup multiple times, the Vezina Trophy in Montreal, and he had retired. And of course, Ken is unbelievably bright and maybe the most book smart athlete I've ever been, maybe the most book smart person I've ever encountered in my life. And so Herb had this affinity, you know, with Ken, and he wanted to pick Ken's brain. So as a consequence, on every off night, Brooks would come over to our hotel to have a couple of beers, you know, and we'd have him for an hour. So we had the access to Brooks that nobody else had, thanks to Ken Dryden. But Brooks was as interested in what Kenny had to say as we were in trying to figure out, you know, what we could glean from what Herb had to say. He was a fascinating man. Listening to, you know, Jim talking about him, I can see exactly what he did. It all worked out perfectly. And, you know, just another quick story. In 2000, Sports Illustrated brought all the great athletes from the 20th century into Madison Square Garden for a show on CBS. And they had the top 10 greatest sports moments of the 20th century. And this, of course, was number one. And they asked me to introduce it and the team, and Herb comes out and the team gets the 14,000 people in the garden that night. Place goes crazy. So now we're walking down a little staircase to go behind the stage, and I'm walking next to Herb. And Herb says, how could they vote that number one? And I said, Herb, won't you ever understand? Please enjoy what happened. It's the greatest moment of the 20th century in sports, certainly in North America. So it was almost as if there was a part of Herb that just couldn't accept how fantastic this was to everybody else. You know, he was a coach through and through. Look, he could have been the king of America a week after the Olympics. What's he doing? He goes to Switzerland to coach a club team. He was a hockey coach.
I love that stuff, man. I mean, that's just, Jim, is there a story that people don't know about this? Because again, it's 41 years. Al's, you know, mentioned again, it was the number one sports moment of an entire sports century. My kids are 12, 10, and 7. They know the story because I made sure that at the very least they saw the movie Miracle. And then, of course, we went to YouTube and showed them moments of, you know, you and, you know, your dad, obviously. And we showed them these moments. And I get emotional just thinking about it. I tear up. I literally tear up because of what it meant to me in 1980, what it means to me now. Is there a story that's never been told? Or do we know everything about this, Jim?
Well, you know, when the kids look at the movie and they see that I didn't take the test, that, you know, Disney asked me for some political license there.
Okay.
What really happened, Herb was so bright that after my mother had passed away, that he had me live with a team doctor because I needed family, right? What I didn't know is that he checked in with a team doctor almost every single night. And when we got that Briggs-Meyer or DIS type of assessment test, I was always planning to take that test, but I did what I did every night. I called home and called my dad. And that particular night he was crying. He had just lost his job as a food service director to Amarac, and he didn't really know what to do. And so I had this aha moment that said, you know, how can I do my dreams when my family is in a situation that they need support? But my mother had made me make a promise that I would never turn pro if I had a chance to represent our country. See, the kids today don't understand it. It wasn't so much about being just an Olympian. It was about representing your country, right? And the Olympian part was how you did it. But it was always about the flag and pride, you know? And that was my dad's generation. You know, that's what I grew up with. That's what I knew, right? And so, you know, I thought if I didn't take this test that Herb Brooks would send me home. I wouldn't break my mother's promise. And it would be really kind of an easy thing to do. I would go because obviously we weren't going to win. And, you know, this was just me being selfish. What I didn't know is Herb Brooks knew all about that. And the part that he loved best was about my character, that if I was willing to give up being an Olympian to support my family, I was just the type of guy he wanted, right? And so here's what he said to me. He goes, can you do your job? I said, yeah, I can. He says, okay, I'm going to help your dad. And he got a loan from my family. Nobody knows that. And what he did is he got me at a comfort level so that I could go out and do what I wanted to do. If you look at Herb Brooks and you think of Warren Strelow, one of the greatest goalie coaches in the National Hockey League, right? Warren Strelow would never have been anything but a college goalie part-time coach without Herb Brooks. What Herb Brooks did is he saw a vision for Warren in that position. Now, everybody's got a goalie coach. It was nobody had a goalie coach. That was even a position. It wasn't a full-time job, right? So here's Herb raising Warren to a level that Warren couldn't get to. Craig Patrick becomes a general manager because of Herb Brooks. The players become these things because of Herb Brooks, right? And so he was a very unselfish man that was a teacher and a motivator. And if he didn't have chaos, he didn't know what to do because he needed that. That was his kryptonite, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. That was what it was that he wanted to do. And he did it so well. And when people said he wouldn't be able to adjust when he had the pros, he adjusted and the pros loved him. You know what I mean? And so for me, he's been an incredible mentor. And so what he did that nobody knows about is he cared. He really cared about people. And why this lasts is because it was true and honest and not fabricated. The flag going over my shoulders wasn't some agent telling me how to do it. It was an American bringing it to the stadium. They couldn't buy, touched by a moment, right? And so what we did and what we have is what America's all about, and that's why it lasts.
That's amazing. Jim, you're amazing. Al, you too. I guess the last question I have here is, clearly, you know, this game was played at 5 in the afternoon. America is another part about it that's unbelievable, that wouldn't really go down today, is that it was held for America to see later on, tape delayed. At what point, Jim, did you and the team hear the phrase, do you believe in miracles? When was the first time? Is there a story behind that, potentially, that you that actually came across you, that that Al's line that resonates still to this day today is one of the greatest lines in the history of sports broadcasting? When did that ever reach you guys?
Well, I just remember it's snowing in Lake Placid. Jim Lampley is taking my dad, Mike Arizioni, his dad. We're walking down. People are surrounding us. And I think Jim Lampley said, you know, L. Michaels calls of, do you believe in miracles? And, you know, it started there. But, you know, the greatest thing, Rich, is I'm now 60, almost 4 years old. Every day I learn the importance of what myself and my teammates were able to accomplish and how it affects people in such a positive way that that's the most refreshing thing. So people will ask me all the time, what's the greatest thing that ever happened to you from the Olympics? Well, when my mother died, so did my dad, right? Mm. But when those Olympics happened, my dad was reborn. You know, he was like the greatest gift there was. He was just a proud dad of having a son who was able to be part of something that was bigger than ourselves. And so the gift is, it's something that I really feel that our team has taken as a responsibility to make sure that we are humble, respectful, and thankful for everybody who paved the way for us. And in our day, it was community, right? It was your town. It was your people who never made you feel bad if you didn't have any money or you needed to borrow something. It was getting rides from neighbors. It was community, right? And that's what I truly think we represent. And that's important to me. And I know it's important to my teammates.
And Rich, just to weigh in, I mean, you know, Jim talks about what it means 41 years later to the people in this country. And I've said this a number of times, but it really resonates to me, is that, you know, when if you're of a certain age, you remember Pearl Harbor. I mean, you have to be really old right now, but you remember Pearl Harbor. A lot of us remember, obviously, when John Kennedy was assassinated. We remember when Bobby Kennedy was assassinated. We remember when the Challenger blew up. We remember Oklahoma City. Obviously, we remember 9/11, and now we can all remember the insurrection at the Capitol. Think about all those events that people remember. Every one of them is terrible, except Lake Placid. That resonates in a completely different manner.
And it's beautiful. And you live to the moment, Al. I mean, and you've done so many great things. I've told you this personally as well. The fact that you live to the moment like that, and you found the economy of words to nail it too. It's quite something, Al, 41 years later.
It's almost like they had the script before it happened. Right?
You guys wrote the script. What I said came out of my heart.
Yeah, but you know, Al, the thing that's so amazing is Ken Dryden is so bright, and a goalie sees the play going from and coming to. So you have a whole different perspective. And to listen to him talk and see how excited he was, and a very impartial, unbiased, just such a professional person. It's crazy how good it is. It's just too good. You know what I mean?
It is. And then the amazing thing too is Kenny had never done this. It was the first time he'd gone into broadcasting. He had just retired. And I met him in Moscow. We went over to scout a tournament in December of 79. And we're sitting there having dinner. And Kenny is explaining to me in great detail the difference between National Hockey League hockey and international hockey. And he says to me at one point, do you think this is the type of thing the American audience will be interested in? And I said, Kenny, yes. But let me introduce you to the world of broadcasting. Can you get it down to 8 seconds?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he did.
Even the call, like, you know, the U.S. is appending too much in Jim Craig and the Rizzioni scores. I mean, he was so I mean, everything he did was the timing of a person who had been there. You know what I mean? It was just fabulous.
Fantastic.
Well, yeah. I could say the same thing about this chat. Thank you so much, guys. It means so much to so many people. And I'm so thrilled that you allow me through my show to bring this to as many people as possible on such a special day. Yeah. Al Michaels, thank you. And Jim Craig, thank you.
Yeah, Al, always loved being sharing some time. Two real professionals in your industry. It's really fun to be able to share a little bit of time. And, you know, it's just a happy moment. It's fun to remember. Thanks for sharing it with me.
And we'll do 42 next year. I'm signing you up right now.
Okay, buddy. Thanks, Al.
Look forward to it. That's Al Michaels and Jim Craig here on the Rich Eisen Show.
Wow.
I mean.
Well done, Rich. That was great.
Awesome.
How cool is that? Talking about his dad, about how Herb Brooks gave him a loan. Oof. Never heard that one before.
No.
Gave his family a loan so he could just say, okay, my family's taken care of. But the fact that he was willing to pitch it all away so he could provide for his family, instead of a coach saying, okay, you're putting family above the team, he's like, that's the guy I want. Let me remove the family issues from the equation so you can go do your job. Do you believe in miracles? Oof. I am getting goosebumps. Let's take a break. We'll finish up the show. Tons of phone calls. Want to talk about those movie lines. Some of that good stuff about Miracle right in there as well in that conversation. Back in a second.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Back on the Rich Eisen Show is one happy simulcast family with our radio audience. Want to let you know right here on Peacock, Rory McIlroy has teamed up with Peacock to bring you the all-new Golf Pass channel. Watch premier instruction and entertainment from the Golf Membership Program, plus daily news from Golf Channel. Everybody sign up at peacocktv.com right now and streaming it now. Go out there and hit them straight best you can. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Some folks have been hanging on for a while. Mike in Orlando, Florida. What's up, Mike? How are you?
Hey, Rich. First off, welcome back.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that.
Week without you and DP, that was tough, I got to admit.
I think we're both back right now.
You're both back now. Great. Yeah, it was great. I actually had to work. I mean, what a novel idea. Anyway, I got a movie quote. See if I can stump you guys.
Okay.
Look, it's not in my nature to be mysterious. But I can't talk about it, and I can't talk about why.
Anybody? Anybody? Bueller? Anybody? You got nothing? What do you got for us, Mike? What is it? Which one?
Ocean's 12.
Yeah, that's a deep cut.
I'm going to get him tomorrow.
But thanks. We're glad that Dan and I are back, so you can no longer be productive at work. Is that what I should say?
That's how you infer that.
Back in Orlando. Clint in Orlando, Florida. Is this Eastwood, Clint?
I was named after Clint Walker.
Very good. I got you.
Going way back, way back.
What's in your mind, Clint?
Okay, Rich. I'm going to make you a special project of mine.
Anybody got one of those there?
Cool Hand Luke?
Cool Hand Luke?
No, you were just talking about it. No Country for Old Men.
Oh, okay. Very good. Hey, yes, Clint.
You got time for one more?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Go for it, Clint.
Don't get off the boat, man. Never get off the boat.
Oh, Pockham Snail.
Yeah, there you go.
Ding, ding.
Very good.
That's my guy, Forrest.
There you go. The dude abide.
There you go. Thank you very much.
I actually have I have a script signed by him. Saying that to me.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's one of my favorite lines. I love that.
What do you mean movie. Saying it to you?
See, to Mike, and he goes, never get out of the boat.
I see what you're saying. See, that's...
He worked on a... I know.
I love the way he talks.
More meat on the bones, Mike. Yeah.
But that...
So, to Mike...
To Mike, he says, never get out of the boat.
There you go. Very good. Mark in Virginia. What's up, Mark?
Hey, Rich. How you doing? Awesome show, as usual.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate that.
Got a good quote for you.
Okay.
All right. walk. Hell, I'll race your ass.
Days of Thunder.
That's it.
Very
whoa.
Good.
Whoa. Whoa.
Very good. Don Bowie got in my ear. That wasn't me. But thank you. It's a team effort. It's a team effort. Oh, I was going to. All right. You just quick trigger finger.
Quick trigger.
You put him off the boat pretty damn fast.
Never get out of the boat.
See, I mean, like, there are some deep cuts here.
Oh, yeah, you go. I got.
You can go. Don't give them up because you're doing this tomorrow.
I mean, I got two already.
But the idea is fans of the movie will know.
Again, you gotta know. They're random lines that fans of the movie will instantly know.
Like me, I can pick Jaws, and there's like probably 10 lines that I love.
Right.
That but you guys might not know,
okay.
But a fan would know. Like well, I consider myself a fan.
No,
fan
you
of Jaws.
You are. A, you need I'm a restraining order. For
I'm out of
film,
control.
Actually,
for yeah, I've seen it.
Like Spielberg would be
I'm
afraid
already,
of you.
I've already. I think three this year, mm-hmm. three times. Last year I saw it at least with like COVID and like the quarantine. Lot. I was up to like 30 okay. to 40.
So the order is you yep. tomorrow.
Yep.
Then Brockman Wednesday. Yep. TJ, you're Thursday.
Holler.
And then Susie, when she does the show Friday, we'll do it.
Wrap it up.
And
well.
Susie texts me. She gave me a little
what?
Little sneak peek of who she's got booked. So, just, you know.
Better better than me, I'm sure. She takes it very seriously. Steve Kerr is booked.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, and she's special for you, Doc Rivers.
That's what she told me. Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. So you can ask Doc.
Hey, Rick, speaking of basketball.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to say happy birthday to my all-time favorite basketball player. I've only idolized two athletes in my entire life.
Okay, Michael Jordan. We saw you put that. Not idolized.
I really
liked
him.
Week.
It was not idolized. Okay. Muhammad Ali.
Yes.
And today's birthday guy right behind me,
Dr. J.
Julius the Doctor
yeah,
Irving.
I believe Dr. J. Oh, look at that photograph.
Oh,
of
hey.
You.
That was from JFK. We're at the airport. This is probably like 2005, and as Brockman brought up Wilmer Valderrama earlier, we were flying from New York to LA, and he goes, dude, turn around. And I turned, and Dr. J was there, and I'd never met Dr. J. And I instantly turned into one of those 16-year-old girls that saw the yeah, Beatles no, for the first time.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. That's great. And as you know, I wholeheartedly approve that message. And I do believe Dr. J celebrated his birthday today by putting together a PSA to get the COVID-19 vaccination.
Oh, nice.
The great man. Happy birthday, Doc.
Happy birthday, Doc. I want to thank Adam Schefter and Jim Craig and Al Michaels and you. We're back, people. We're back on tomorrow's show. Jason Light, the GM of the Bucks, and more. Back for Peacock in a second.